You're listening to Winning at Life. Lots of topics like what happens to Social Security when the worker dies? What about the number you can't plan retirement without? Hey, how about some thoughts on refis in this low interest rate environment? And your calls. Gosh, I'm excited. How about you, James?
Wildly popular topic that we did during the week was what happens to the Social Security account when someone passes away. And this could be you, this could be your spouse, this could be your parents. But we spurred so many callers. Once Gregory started this topic, I think we just ran into five straight Social Security calls where people were asking, okay, all these rules, how does this specifically apply to me? So I'm glad we're going to reprise that coming up, because how else are you going to know? What are the shows telling you about this? What class did you take in college that taught you this? None. So that's why I like doing stuff like that on this show. Bad news, the jobless claims went up again, unemployment, all that good stuff. Are you concerned about that, Gregory?
I am concerned in the short term, and we know it's COVID related. There's been additional dial backs because of, this is the winter time. They were expecting COVID to be more impactive. And then there's this other strain of COVID that seems to be more infectious. I don't know the details on that. It's just a concern, and you have to be careful out there. You know, you have to mask up, social distance, and avoid big groups and stuff like that. So just be mindful out there, but it is impacting. I saw a cover of the Times-Picayune Advocate this morning, and essentially that a lot of appointments for vaccine by the Ochsner system had to be canceled because vaccine shipments did not arrive. And I'm like, well, this isn't helping me move up the line any if they can't even meet the appointments right now. I didn't get into the article, but, you know, my take was, gosh, that's disappointing. We need to be going the other way. Is what I would have liked to have seen on the headline is, gosh, we can't get enough people in to use them up. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd like to see, but that's not what we're seeing. So that's not good news on getting us to a point where we can see some normalcy again.
The IRS has pushed the tax filing season to February 12th. So the 2020 tax filing season begins, a few weeks later than last year's January open. The free file program is now open for taxpayers, but the federal agency, the IRS, are concerned that there's going to be some issues for taxpayers because there's all kinds of additional paperwork and things to consider that are not normally part of tax season. So the extra week is going to give the IRS more time to do additional programming testing of their systems in the background, because it's not that you're not ready, they're not ready. So tax filing season in earnest begins February 12th, just got pushed back. Gregory, are you one of these people that gets on them taxes as fast as you possibly can? I know people that as soon as they get their W-2s and they get all their paperwork together, they're pushing off. They're trying to get their refund.
Depends on the simplicity for the person and having it together. Mine's a bit more complicated. The thing is, we're always working on it from that standpoint and being ready. Probably... And it might be more the tax preparer taking more time, you know, when you have multiple companies from that standpoint. And one of the things that delays is getting the financial information, say, from your investment broker and other companies that you do business with. Are you getting those year-end statements, tax information in a timely manner? You know, when you have, K-1 distributions, that is something like that typically holds it up because you're having to wait for somebody else to provide that information. Now, if you're a W-2 employee, most everybody has that at the end of the year. Or if you're retired, you know what your Social Security income is, your pension income, and your investment statements are ready in January. So once again, it does the complexity. Mine is not going to be done early, never is, but I'm always working on it.
Yeah, there's also that group of people that kind of want to push it off as long as they possibly can. I understand that as well. I haven't met anyone that loves going through the tax process.
Humans tend to procrastinate. It isn't necessarily because they don't want to pay the bill. Actually, the IRS rules are you supposed to have already paid what you're going to owe at this point.
Frank in Baton Rouge, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Frank?
Yes, I'm 72 years old now, and I've been retired for about 6 years now, and I'm kind of hesitant to stay in the stock market. And this election of Joe Biden is kind of trying to push me off over the edge here. I'm interested in not being fully invested in the high-risk stock market. Is there other options available, like municipal bond funds, stocks that pay dividends, or something else, or what?
Well, stocks that pay dividend, you know what those are? Those are stocks.
No.
Those are volatile right. Stocks that pay dividends, you know, just to use them as, and when you say, I'm just going back to you say, well, maybe I should get out of the stock market was your wording there. Well, shifting to stocks that pay dividends, those are still stocks, and you probably have those already in your mix. So are you 100% in the stock market, Frank?
Yes. Yes. I'm 60-40. I'm 60 in 50-50 in bonds and equities.
Okay. Well, you do have a 50-50 mix, but this also goes to what I'll define as a risk tolerance or your risk number. And using your age as a guideline of reducing, you know, isn't necessarily it. It's more about how you feel about risk and whether or not you think your portfolio can absorb volatility and can you mentally absorb it. And we have people at different times for different reasons, you know, they ask, you know, I think I'd like to be a little bit more conservative. I don't feel I have time for my account to take a hit any longer. So what they're wanting to do is dial it back. So we would revisit their risk number and we would dial it back. So some of this, and it's not based upon, oh my gosh, you're going to need more risk because you need more return. I don't ever look at it that way because I think we can manage money, be conservative, and produce some returns that should help that portfolio along as well. Mm-hmm. And my thought is, if you're feeling that, you probably do need to dial it back. But I wouldn't do it just because somebody else was elected president or if there was a shift in Congress, because over the past couple of weeks, I've went through a number of historicals that kind of shows that, you know, first year of a new president, the market does well. When there's a Democratic government, the market tends to do well. And then historicals also show, well, you know, returns are better when Democrats are in charge than Republicans. So now with that said, that doesn't mean how it's going to go. And you've got to create balance. And I believe in blending. But, you know, we've got in my day job at Gregory Ricks and Associates Wealth Advisors, we manage a lot of people that are super low on risk. There was a conversation recently with one of my advisors, and I said, I don't see an updated risk number here. And I said, I know she's going to come in low. I predict her risk number is going to be like a 10. So that's somebody scores a 10, probably doesn't want any market in there. And later he said, yeah, that number came in as an 8. I said, yeah, I knew she would be super conservative in that case. So, and that's what you got to find out and adjust to it. And then that ties in because you're retired. The other part is income planning. How does your assets look producing income? What's a reasonable expectation for the assets to meet your income demands over the next 20 years or so? Is that helpful, Frank?
Yes, that's good. I may give you all a call later during the week then and see exactly. Tell you, look up my portfolio and see exactly what I got. So I give you some of the more details of it and see if we come up, because I'm definitely risk averse and I want to get as low as I can possibly get without getting out.
Yeah.
So you answer my question about getting out, which I'm going with you saying a historical thing should be okay. So that alleviates my risk to a certain degree, but I still want to be less risk adverse also. So
yeah,
you answered both of my questions.
I agree with your take on that you probably need to readjust at this time. And I think that's a good idea. And, you know, we can start with a phone conversation to help get you started down that road as well, Frank. Hey, the office number, whenever you want to ring them next week, and everybody listening that would like a conversation, it can always start with a phone call, 504-832-9200.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks for the call, Frank.
504-832-9200.
Yes, sir. That's the office number. Regardless of where you're listening across the country, or if you're wanting to go to our office on the Gulf Coast or Mandeville, New Orleans, just call that number and my team will get you connected up with the appropriate person to help you with that conversation. Cool. Have a great weekend, Frank. Thanks for listening to Winning at Life.
Thank you, Frank. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995.
There's a lot of people like Frank there where, you know, they do change. And over the past years, I've had clients where, you know, they may have been in their 401k in their working life and may have been 100% stocks at times, or 70, 80% stocks. And then they retire and we get them to more of a blend. You know, I'm more of a 50-50 guy that way. We're thinking what's appropriate for most people. And that's why we have the invest 50-50 philosophy. That doesn't explain it, but that's my, you know, kind of tagline for it there. But those people all of a sudden, you know, will shift it. Gregory, you know, I think I need to dial it back even more. And if somebody's wanting to be more conservative, I don't have a problem with it. They're not going to come in and have a conversation like, oh my gosh, actually you need to be ramping it up, or you need to stay the course. We can work more conservative and get the job done. And that's what you ultimately want to try to do, is levelize return, levelize volatility.
There is such thing as no risk investing.
Yeah. And that was kind of a story I was alluding to, where somebody would be more risk tolerant and you can see it shift. And then they come to a point and you know what? They don't have any risk now. Why? They didn't want any. So it gets, it can be tremendously dialed back. And once again, just because you hear on the news and other financial talk shows and everybody's talking about the market and the market does this, that doesn't mean you have to take the risk. You might be in a great place financially to where that can be tremendously dialed back, or dial the risk back altogether. A lot of people go forward with no risk, and there is that world out there, and it does work.
Well, there's also levels of risk within the stock world, because, you know, puts and options and things we don't talk about a whole lot on this show are just ridiculously risky. Single stocks are pretty risky on themselves, but indexing seems to be, at least mathematically speaking, less risky as far as compared to the other stock options.
Well, for the most part, it gets diversification, helps reduce errors, and historicals tell us using stock indexes, and I prefer exchange-traded funds to do so because of low cost, is they skew higher opportunity for higher returns, is what the historicals tell us. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the subject of options and puts and calls and stuff like that. Those are risky things that you need to avoid. And, making sure you always have liquidity, you know, like non-tradable REITs or something I'm adverse to. You know, some may present those as conservative, low risk, but if you have a problem on liquidity, you know, here's a question to ask. How can I get my money out? Can I get my money out? And that's a couple questions you should always have a discussion about.
Yeah, that's rule number three, the return of your money, more important than the return on your money in the classic big three rules.
That's it.
All right. We have some new videos waiting for you on the Winning at Life YouTube channel. When you get a chance, if you're already on YouTube at some point, I know you just goof around on YouTube. We all do it. You go watch a video and then they recommend another video. Next thing you know, you spend a few minutes on there. Well, you can spend a few minutes with us next time. Some of our videos that we've put up lately include talking about how these stocks going to less risky investments, how much of your Social Security income will be taxed. We also added this week, is having a good credit score a big deal in retirement? And we also put up the New Year financial resolutions to help build your wealth. So go find us on YouTube as well.
You know what I think money does? It gives you options throughout your life, and especially when you don't want to do that job anymore. Some of the comments I get, you know, I'm just tired. I've just had enough. And, you know, and it might be another phrase to say, hey, I'm burnt out. You know, and when I say tired, it just might be the grind and the pressure. You know, somebody say in their 50s or 60s, like, you know, I'm kind of done there. Do I have enough to retire? Or the question will come up, can I retire? And that's the conversation to look at what your risk is. Look at your assets and see what your tolerance is. And is there enough income sources to generate the income that you need, which gives you that option? Say, yeah, you don't have to work there anymore. You're only working there because you want to. Or they might want to look at, can I supplement income because I want to go do something else? And there's those conversations as well. Well, I want to do this, but I need to start taking $1,000 a month. So that's the different situation where you have those conversations. And it doesn't mean somebody when tired, meaning they're tired of life. No, they're tired of that job and some of the pressures and want options. And that, and those options can help you whether you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. That's what I always kind of define as money does for you, is give you options. Another word for retirement is, hey, do I have to keep doing this? Do I have my options, meaning choices, other options in life built up there, just to make sure we've got the right clarification. Now, that conversation from our last caller, he mentioned that and to be in his 70s and say have 70% of his money in stocks, yeah, that's kind of heavy there, I think, for anybody, actually. Even if it's diversified, that's a lot to have in that arena, even if half of it's made up with dividend paying stocks, because those go down as well. And just because it's dividend paying stocks, does that mean it's going to go well, or that those dividends are going to keep being paid? You know, investing, there's a huge trail of stories out there talking about how dividends have been reduced. And you know what follows that? Stock going down, or dividends are paused just because it's dividend. And I also have heard people say, you know, there's no way I would sell my dividend paying. So I would never sell a dividend paying stock. I would, because it could well be going the wrong way. And I don't make a decision solely based upon it being a dividend paying stock. Let's go to the other side of that, on the bond side. So typically I'll hear the phrase of, you know, do you have something like municipal bonds, munis? And that gets thrown out there loosely, and munis are, you know, have tax advantages, tax exempt. They're not taxed. And here, and you don't ever hear me talking about return. I'm going to tell you, returns are lower in those, but the number I like to give out, and there is what's called the taxable bond market. And there's not a darn thing wrong with it as well. The taxable bond market was up 7.5% in 2020 and has gained 7.6% per year total return over the last 40 years. That's going from 1981 to the through the end of 2020. And the bond index I'm referring to is the Bloomberg Barclays U.S. Aggregate Bond Index that was created in 1986. It's calculated using publicly traded investment grade government bonds, corporate bonds, and mortgage related bonds with at least 1 year until final maturity, was used as the bond measurement. But I just think it's so important to understand. And then, and let me break it down a different way. The 7.5% total return by Bloomberg Barclays U.S. Aggregate Bond Index in 2020 follows its 8.7% gain in 2019. That's the best back-to-back years for the index since 2001 through 2002. I think that's pretty telling. So when you're asking about choices there, I was also on index linked. And there, what is that index? Darn it, it just escaped me. But there was a discussion on an index regarding an index link where you don't invest in the market. And a lot of what we like is par rates with the S&P 500. But there's an index that basically has a effect of reducing volatility, and had a question about that yesterday, that a discussion came up, and I said, well, you know, what that does is that is an S&P 500 that has a kind of, simply define it as a switch that reduces volatility, and it's a return. Last year was 5.5%. Its 3-year return was 5%. That doesn't mean it's going forward for you in that way. But, you know, that's for something that has no downside risk, no negative risk impact, you know, I think that's pretty strong as well. So when you kind of ask, you know, the question is there other options than stock market? I think that's a good argument for there is.
Talk about the limited risk that's in the bond world, though, because some people, if they're new to the show, may leave the impression that bonds are pretty safe, comparable to fixed annuities. No, it's been my impression that fixed annuities are even safer than bonds, because bonds have they have three risks: interest risk, default risk, and
credit risk.
Credit risk. Okay, so not 100% safe, but fixed annuities. Can you say the term 100% safe? Is there something that can possibly go wrong with the fixed annuity?
Okay, fixed annuity, and let's define that. There's multiple ways to look at that. You have interest-bearing annuities where you give a interest for a fixed period of time, or you can use fixed indexed annuities, which give you the upside of the market, where they link to the upside of the market with no downside. And those can be set up where they do not have fees. So those can be added into your portfolio mix. The downside on annuities typically is they have a surrender period, meaning you can't take out all the money during a certain number of years without a fee for exiting. And it's not dissimilar to, say, having long-term CDs as well, where there might be a fee to unwind that. But that does not stop you from using that as an income tool that could immediately turn on and distribute income from that standpoint there. So that from a negative standpoint, it's having a surrender fee, but being under a surrender period does not stop you from turning on income. And depending on how they're linked, you know, could be some reasonable returns for you to where it gives you another choice other than the stock market to make money and have it work. And, you know, honestly, there's a lot of people that love those tools because they do not expose their money to risk. That index I was referring to was called the Mark 5 index, and it's basically an S&P 500 it smooths out volatility in essence. And it's one to have in the mix with the pure S&P 500 link index is a good choice. So those are two things I really like on the index linked world. But the Winning at Life app can help you stream the audio as well as watch the show on YouTube, Facebook Live and others. And I share it on my personal Facebook page, but I've got the Gregory Ricks page, Winning at Life Facebook page. There's a Gregory Ricks and Associates page. And ladies, there's a Women Winning at Life page also on Facebook. And that's a group that we're going to give more emphasis to in 2021 and create more events. And my wife, Stacy, is a founding member of the Women Winning at Life group as well. So she plans to get much more involved with that. And you know, we have a pretty good size female staff at Gregory Ricks and Associates, and they're liking the idea of doing more with that this year. Let's see, if you'd like to join the conversation, 504-260-0995. And one of our sponsors is Mosquito Joe, yourlands.mosquitojoe.com. And by the way, I use them year around. That's how much I hate mosquitoes. You know, mosquitoes don't take it personal at all, but I don't like them. So let's see, what's my next thought here? Oh, look, taxes are going to be a problem. I'm about to give you a few tips on maybe why you should take your required minimum distributions early. And I'll define what I mean by that. But, you know, if you're looking to dial back taxes, there's a download for you. GregoryRicks.com/too much. Are you paying too much in taxes in your investments? Or are you concerned about that in retirement? One of the big questions is, you know, what are y'all doing about taxes going up? I said, we're doing quite a bit of a forward-looking analysis on that. So get that download, GregoryRicks.com/too much, and let's start a conversation. One of the concerns always, you know, I have a lot of people that just like, oh my gosh, I wish I didn't have to take required minimum distributions. And kind of that group was helped out in 2020 because of COVID, because required minimum distribution, that requirement to take minimum distributions from your qualified accounts if you're no longer working and are in RMD age. So the people, you know, and in the past, it's been 70 and a half and up. If you're not taking them yet, well, it starts at age 72 for you. But there may be reasons to start taking required minimum distributions now. What do I mean? Well, why would I take them early? Well, what I'm basically saying is there might be reasons to take distributions from your retirement accounts early instead of waiting until you have to. And this really falls into the planning side, but I can think of at least three reasons why you should take a distribution, even if the IRS isn't requiring you to do so. The first reason is because you need the money. Second, you want to save on taxes. I'm like, if you could save on taxes, I'd probably think, you know, I'm good. Let's do that if I can save taxes. And then the maybe even a bigger reason is leaving a larger legacy after you're gone. See, for many Americans, the tax debate over RMDs is moot. These individuals relying primarily on Social Security and their tax-deferred savings to provide them with living expenses during retirement, they're not being required to take a distribution. They simply need to take it. So that's where it comes down to, you need the money. And taking distributions from your IRA may help you sustain your retirement income for several years while you wait to file for Social Security benefits. I'll also, you've heard me talk about this in the past, as a bridge to Social Security. And that's where on income planning, you have to go and look at different scenarios. It's not just straight up, okay, let's turn on Social Security now, or let's take these distributions now. And it may combine into, because of what you're going to face in RMDs, required minimum distributions. When you're required to take them in the future, and if you've deferred, you've built up a bigger account, you're going to have an increasing amount over retirement. That could push you into more taxes, cause Social Security to become more taxable. But looking at these scenarios, does it work out better to take some distributions now and let the Social Security benefit increase for one or both of you in the household? Or should it be the other way? Is it better to defer on there? So taking distributions from your IRA can help sustain retirement income for several years while you let that other benefit increase. So part of planning is looking once again at those various scenarios. The other is, it seems kind of backwards, you know, that taking a non-required IRA distribution will save taxes. I'll simply define that as margin in your tax bracket, knowing you're going to have to take it later. And you've built up the account larger by deferring. It's going to have more money, meaning more of a distribution. And tell me, do you think taxes are going to be higher in the future? I'm pretty sure that tax break we were all given 4 years ago, where the brackets were adjusted, expanded, the standard deduction was increased, the tax bracket percentages were lowered for everybody. You know, that was temporary. It was a 10-year deal, and we've got less than 6 years left of it. That tells me right there, taxes are going up. And I don't think we have a climate in Washington that says, oh yeah, we're going to lock that in for you. I think they're wanting to accelerate it. So this might be a reason to look at why you should start taking distributions from your IRA instead of waiting until required minimum distributions get there. And I'll jump, and I can talk. There's so much I can talk about just that one section right there, but we've got a couple minutes for the top of the hour coming up on ending of this first hour of Winning at Life. But the third one is leaving more as a legacy. The Secure Act makes inherited RMDs less attractive. The so-called stretch IRA was largely taken away by law, and the result is more taxes for those who inherit IRAs. So adult beneficiaries essentially, and that's just summarizing it, the stretch is no longer there. So what happens is the IRA that's inherited by a non-spouse Benny, that's an adult, is going to be spent down over 10 years. Well, there's only one RMD for those. It's year 10 that they have to take out 100% of the value. So if you're wanting to leave more options and not straddle Benny's with a tax-infested account, there are some other choices out there to do so. And one that's getting a lot of attention is use a life insurance policy as a tax-free inheritance for your children instead of giving them a large IRA in balance. The death benefit can go directly to the children, or it can be into a trust that's paid out as lifetime income. So maybe should be a consider to take distributions to fund that strategy. So repeating again, three reasons maybe to start taking distributions now. One, you need the money. It can be a bridge to improving your income planning. Number two, saving money on taxes. So that means forward planning to create efficiency. And then you may be able to leave a larger legacy behind. We've got Jude Heath of J. Heath & Company CPAs, and we're going to talk about 2021 taxes, and can we pay less? That's the question. You know, are there opportunities for that in what we're seeing on these tax rules? I'm Gregory Ricks, your host, financial advisor by day. I have a firm and a great team, and been doing this radio show for over 10 years, and we like to talk about money, on making money, keeping money, growing it, and making better financial decisions. GregoryRicks.com is more information about me. In the media tab, there's information about streaming the show audio or watching us. And we're on Facebook Live, Periscope, YouTube, DLive, Smashcash, Twitch, all these streaming platforms, about any of them out there, you can watch the show. So, hey, everybody out there. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we want to take your calls. We want to hear your question. We want to give you some help on financial matters. That is 504-260-0995. How's it going, James?
It's going great. I'm having a good Saturday so far, but all I'm doing is having fun doing a radio show. Our guest joining us now is the great Jude Heath. He is the CPA of the Total Wealth Authority of Gregory Ricks and Associates and a regular guest on this show. And we like to bring him in to tackle the tax questions that are always a part of the show. Welcome back, Jude Heath. Now,
great. Thank y'all for having me.
I saw, I just heard in the top of the hour news break that they pushed back tax season to February 12th. What's that all about?
Yeah, that's a few weeks later than they normally open up e-filing, and that's critical. You know, when you call the IRS, when you write the IRS, what's evident is that the pandemic has pushed them very far behind in response. And the news clip that was run said that they're announcing that software changes for things like the stimulus have caused them to push back the filing until the middle of February. And of course, there's always glitches that come out in the first week or so that need to be patched over. But it's going to be it's going to be a tough tax season this year to file by April the 15th. It's interesting to hear that at least on their end that of designing their software to accept the e-filing, that they're already struggling to get the tax rules into it.
So they're deferring on the start of tax season, but they haven't pushed the April 15th deadline back, or have they?
They have not yet. We'll have to see how tax season progresses. Obviously, you know, for us, if we can't perfect the filing for our clients by April the 15th, then we'll suggest an extension.
Oh, okay. Tell them it's 2 weeks late. I had a computer glitch, and they should just take it. All right, let's go ahead and jump in the phones here. Ryan in New Orleans, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory, James, and Jude Heath. How can we help you, Ryan?
Hi, how you doing? I kind of have a tax question, kind of relating back to what you were talking about with retirement, but from the other side. I'm 30 years old, and I'm looking into trying to figure out what's best to invest in a Roth IRA currently, or to, you know, do the pre-tax option with where we're currently at. What would be better to try to invest in at this point?
Well, the very best way is to pay taxes on the seed and have the harvest tax free. That is the ultimate way. And I'll let Jude in a moment have a thought on that. But knowing we I always kind of define it, Ryan, as three tax worlds. We have pre-tax money we can put away. We can put away after-tax money that grows tax-free, which is the Roth. And then we have after-tax savings that kind of can be a step-up basis as we go. And if you're doing all three and taking income from all three, you're paying less overall taxes than a focus being on putting away pre-tax. My thoughts on pre-tax money, like traditional 401k, for example, or traditional IRAs, is there's benefits to doing so because that's tax-deductible money, or you're not taxed on it in your income where it goes into the 401k. And I think, you know, ultimately, because of that advantage, that helps you. That's kind of like Uncle Sam kicking in and giving you preferential tax treatment to put money away to save for the future. And if you can afford to pay taxes and then put the money away, and that's where a Roth IRA comes in. So I'm kind of a fan of trying to get all into the mix. But if you had to say, I only want to do it one way, well, I'd rather go the tax-free way. What do you think, Jude?
Yeah, I agree with what you said, Gregory. And Ryan, the point on the Roth is, if you don't have a retirement
plan at work that matches in any way, then of course, you know, you've got to fund your own retirement. You start off with the Roth because you get the tax-free growth, like Gregory says, if you can afford the tax. And sometimes in later earning years, the Roth has an income limit, and so you're precluded. You can't contribute to a Roth. And so while you can contribute to a Roth, it's good to build up those numbers. But you need both when you retire. You need some pre-tax, and you need some Roth that's been growing tax-free. It's a good idea. It might not be enough if you ever run your numbers to have just only Roth contributions throughout your working life.
Yeah, those tax brackets Jude was referring to as the modified adjusted gross income impact single filers at $139,000 for 2020. And for couples married filing jointly, the modified adjusted gross income must be under $206,000. And they start reducing and eliminating your ability to contribute to a Roth.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, and I really appreciate that.
Okay. Any other questions, Ryan?
No, I think that answers most of it. I'm just starting to get into that investing phase, so that definitely helps with where to start with that. So we'll go ahead and do that.
With
so.
Your age, you definitely want to get some Roth into the mix. You definitely do.
Great call, Ryan. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
If you want to be after Ryan, 504-260-0995. Now, did we nail down Jude Heath if he has to choose a one or the other? Because I like how it's a not real hypothetical, but you put yourself in it anyway. If you had to choose one, go Roth.
I think Jude will go to, it depends on the situation. And I'll throw out there, like, that is the best ultimate way to go. But you are limited. There's only so much you can put in there. Income's going to affect it in the future. As well. So, and you're going to need to save more than what you can put into a Roth contributory account. And then also on, if you're doing a 401k, and I'm sure Jude agreed with me, is you could put everything in the 401k, but you're being taxed on everything you're putting into a Roth 401k, and that's even with the matching and all. And that's where I think you kind of have to have a blend. Blend in 20 seconds. What do you think, Jude?
I agree. I think it's a full analysis that needs to, you know, folks like Ryan, really every taxpayer that wants to save for retirement needs to look at it. And see, you know, what's best and when are those decisions best to fold in and layer in and build yourself a retirement portfolio.
Thank you, Jude.
Kevin in Gretna. You're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory, James, and Jude. How can we help you, Kevin?
Yeah, I just recently got my 2019 tax return back, and I made contributions to my Roth. And I come to find out when I looked at my modified adjusted gross income, I can't contribute the full $7,000. Both my wife and I put $7,000 in each for the 2019 tax year. So I have to, I guess, take some back out. My understanding is as you go along, it reduces the amount that you can put in, correct, once you get over a certain level?
Go ahead, Jude.
Yes, there's a phase out there that rates down how much you can contribute. Are you in that phase out range?
Yes, I am. From what I'm looking at, it's I guess we're both allowed to put in $4,800 each. So, I guess the question is, how do I go about taking it out of or removing that, and what are the penalties? What penalties am I looking at when I do remove it?
Yeah. So, Jude, that's just to help the listeners. What he's talking is, this happened where he had an excess contribution to an IRA account, and in particular, it's to his Roth account. But that happens time to time. So go ahead. You're the guy that helps him fix this.
Right. And so what's going to happen is when you withdraw the excess Roth, you know, in 2021, at the end of, you know, 2021 or in 2022, you're going to get a 1099 for that withdrawal. And then in addition to that, you should amend your 2019 filing to pick up that excess contribution and pay those penalties.
Okay. And what happens, because, you know, obviously we did the same thing in the 2020 tax year. Do I just, when I go to my CPA, just have him, obviously I have to take it off, but just have him make the adjustments on that tax return as well?
Well, there's still time to take out some Roth from 2020. If that's okay. Your question, if you did the same thing in 2020, then when you contact the mutual fund company for the Roth, you know, explain that to them and let them fix 2020.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not uncommon to have happen. And
thank you, Kevin.
It even relates to a caller in on our weeknight show that we do weeknights at 7. There was a caller about where they had a inherited account shifted directly. Those funds were rolled from a parent's account to a non-spouse account, but it was directly to her IRA, which can't be done, but that was an excess contribution. And there's a 6% penalty on excess contribution, so if you leave that there. But there is a period of time that you have, and essentially it's before you do your tax return, I believe it is, Jude, that you can take that back and correct it. And then if you're eligible, you can re-put it back for the next tax year as well. So we do have that happen, and he should go to wherever he's had his – speak with your tax professional or CPA, but then go to your firm that you're working with that custodies your investments and get that paperwork done to correct that. Your thoughts, Jude?
Yes. So you don't get an extended deadline. It's only through April the 15th to remove those excess Roth contributions.
Yeah. So that is something just to get on and get that transaction happen. Don't wait till right before tax time. You're going to get yourself in a bind.
Does it work both ways? If you didn't make a Roth contribution, but you have some extra money and you want to under the name of 2020, you can do it from now until April 15th?
Till April 15th.
Yes.
Or if you file your return earlier, Jude, right? You should have it in.
Right. Before you file.
Yeah. Before you file.
Up to April the 15th.
That's the right way to word it.
Thanks, guys. Francis in Metairie, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory James and Jude Heath. How can we help you, Francis?
Hello. How you doing?
We are great.
Awesome.
Very good. Very good. So I am 59 years old, and I've been learning about a high cash value whole life insurance. And I just want to kind of get your general feel for that, your opinion, comments on investing, I guess, in a high cash value whole life insurance policy as an alternative to continuing to invest in my 401k and Roth accounts, because I would not be able to do both. So just that's all. Kind of want to know what you think about that.
Once again, depending on the situation, I'll define it. We have a strategy that we look at, and this isn't a fit for everybody, and not necessarily think that a pure whole life policy is the best way to go, but I refer to that as a max funding strategy. So you've kind of filled up everything else as far as your taxable IRA, Roth, and 401k, and you're looking to put other money away. So this is after-tax money that would be putting to work. Whoever's talking to you about it, is that for the purpose of generating future income?
Yes. It's because the idea is, at least according to what I'm hearing, is that it's a safer safer place to put money that's not subject to the volatility of the market, and it would be an additional income to what you're withdrawing from, you know, your 401k and Roth at retirement.
Correct. And here's how I would look at that, and what we do for clients that are looking for that in my day job is, and I define it once again as a max funding strategy. So, and it depends on how much extra money you have to put away in that. But we kind of look and we kind of shop the market, because they're not all built the same. I do not like variable life for that, just to be clear. Well, heck, I don't like variable annuities either. And I've got a lot of basis for those statements. But with that said, I would look at, you could look at whole life, look at universal life from an interest standpoint, or indexed universal life, which I kind of tend to favor, but those vary among companies. And typically we will look at multiple companies because it can be impacted by how much money you're putting in. It could be impacted by your health and your age. And the companies, all the companies don't look at those the same way. And the other thing on projected return, Francis, I want to make sure we're taking a conservative look. And even if they're kind of say, well, we're basing it on a 7%, that's too much. And then it also have to look at when you're going to start taking income, projecting out, and how much income impacts that as well. It is a thing that we do as well, but you can see there's a lot of things I look at it. And then there's a tax analysis that we do also on that to make sure it is going to be beneficial for you tax-wise now and in the future. Does that help you, Francis?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Yeah. So in general, your main point is that I should continue to invest in my 401k and Roths and ETFs brokerages. And if I have the additional money, which I don't think I do, but if I did, then I could put some of that into a whole life policy if it was affordable.
Yes. And it's not just simple. Let me just get a whole life and put that in there. You need, you know, this takes some planning and looking at the different scenarios, but I would not dial back those plans to go put money in a whole life insurance for that purpose.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Jude, you familiar with that at all? Any thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are, Francis, it sounded like the reason why I was looking at this product was for volatility, and volatility in the market. And I know from sitting with your folks that you guys have some very specific strategies on how to make folks less the accounts less volatile.
Yeah, the invest 50-50 philosophy is what Jude's referring to, and he's been through it and taken a look at how we do that. And you know, you're right, is there are ways to reduce volatility without having to go to a life insurance plan for that purpose there. So,
because my immediate thought when I heard Francis was that in every whole life policy, there's a term insurance cost. And I compared that to, you know, sitting with your folks and going through your 50-50 strategy, and it seemed like it kind of matched up and made sense.
Yeah. So in that world of investing in 401k, you're probably investing some outside of that. But if it's just inside the 401k, you've got to do some blending.
So we're going to get Jude Heath, CPA. We're going to get his response to this.
Let's do Greg in Gretna. Hey, Greg, you're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Greg?
Say, for example, I have $36,000 in capital gains losses for the year 2020. I can only deduct $3,000 of that for the next 12 years. Okay? But if I make $36,000 in capital gains this year, I have to pay those taxes for this year on the whole $36,000. I mean, that's like the debt stacked against you. Who do you talk to straighten that out?
Now, I may have missed the front end of the call.
Okay. Let's say for 2020, I have $36,000 in capital gain losses for that year. All right? I can only deduct $3,000 in losses. I only get a $3,000 credit per year for the next 12 years for that $36,000 loss.
Realize if I... Here we are. Realize capital losses from stocks can be used to reduce your tax bill. If you don't have capital gains to offset capital loss, you can use a capital loss as a offset to ordinary income up to $3,000 a year to deduct your stock market losses. You'd have to fill out Form 89 49. So what you're talking about is referring to your ordinary income. But if you have capital gains, those losses will offset those gains.
So, yeah, but I'm just saying, let's say for 2020, I had no gains. It was all losses. $36,000 in losses for 2020. Okay? I cannot use the full $36,000 when tax time comes. No. I can only use $3,000 of it for the next 12 years.
Right, because that's you're reducing ordinary income. But let's say next year you have $36,000 in gains that you've cashed in. Then you can use up those capital losses then. But you can only use $3,000 a year to reduce ordinary income. That's the difference.
Okay. All right. I got you then. All right. Okay.
That makes you feel better?
Yeah, it does. Sort of. Because I'm like, man, so it's like only when you win, you get to pay the taxes right then and there. But if you lose, you can only deduct $3,000 a year, you know. But I understand what you're saying now. So, I mean, my tax guy should know all of this. I mean, pretty much.
Yeah,
you should. Yeah.
If not, call ours. Call ours if yours don't. We'll help you.
All right, we're back live now. Jude Heath, your thoughts on that call from Greg and Gretna?
In the beginning of the call, and I mean, Gregory corrected him that you are allowed to use your tax loss carry forward against future gains.
Yeah, so obviously that's a common misconception.
Yeah, he was thinking that $3,000 would only do future stock losses, but that's only ordinary income. All right, I'm glad.
Correct, not capital.
I'm glad it was that clear. Let's try a live call. Let's do Greg in Pearl River. You're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory, James, and Jude Heath. How can we help you, Greg?
Hey, how you doing? I got a question about our first savings plan and diversifying it.
Okay.
Right now, I have pretty much everything, about $62,000 in total. I haven't been investing that long, but I pretty much have it between the C fund and the F fund, 80% and 20%, 80 C fund and 20 S fund. And I hear everybody talking about diversifying, but then I also heard that, you know, if you leave it in the C fund and just ride out the market, that I'm just trying to see if you would recommend at that time with that amount, diversifying it more into a G fund or leave it pretty much on the stock market.
Yeah, for the listeners, what you're referring to, the C fund is the common stock index investment fund. The G fund's government securities. I fund, for example, is international. What is your age again, Greg?
I'm 49 right now.
49. You know,
yes, sir.
For the most part, I'm kind of subject to your risk tolerance, and I don't know that. And that's also just something we do in my day job is we have a 401k maximizer program. And basically it's not just that, but it's helping people with this decision-making. And I think part of making that decision is what is your risk tolerance? And I think you should have diversification. I don't think anybody ever should be 100% in stocks. And if you want to find some balance, I think for most people, they should be somewhere in the neighborhood of a 50-50 blend regarding government securities and common stocks. That's kind of where I land on that. Does that help you, Greg?
Yes, sir, it does. Obviously, my wife has been talking about it, and I've been looking at, you know, pretty much timing is when to move it over, you know, into the G fund or diversify it. Because, you know, right now the stock market is doing good, but we all seen what happened in the past.
Yeah. And look, if this goes to rebalancing, you know, according to what your amount is. And if you're keeping some blend, and let's say your blend for your tolerance is 60-40 or 70-30, and the market's had a good run over the past 12 months, the S&P 500, you know, despite COVID and everything that happened, was up 18.4% last year. So if you were kind of going, say, example of a 70-30 mix, now you're overweighted. So you know when it's a good time to rebalance? Tuesday, when the market's back open. I would take a look at doing that and not waiting. You can't predict the future.
All right, Greg, thank you very much. Let's go to Sherry in Mobile. You're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Sherry?
Sherry, you there?
Yeah, yes, sir. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes. Hey, Sherry.
Okay, sorry. Hi. I have a small business, and we've been very blessed. We have pretty much have a profit every year. And when the business, because we're an S corporation, so when the business makes a profit, when I file my personal taxes, I pay income tax on the profit of the business.
Okay.
Right?
So it's a pass through.
Yes, sir, it does. And so my question is, last year, my husband and I bought a house, and we took proceeds, basically a distribution from the business, to put a down payment on the house. We've been in business for 10 years. We've never taken any sort of a distribution, and kind of the money is just kind of accumulated. We use it as we need it in the business. But when it was, like I said, this was all, it was a straight profit. We took a portion of the profits from the business and used them for a down payment on the house. My question is that something, do I have to claim that again as taxable income? Because it's like, say, if the business makes $10,000 profit on the year, well, I take my income and then I have to add $10,000 to that, and that's what my taxes are based on. So even though I've never taken that distribution in the past, since I took it all in 1 year, do I have to claim that again as income, or have I already paid the taxes on that when I go to file my income tax this year?
I'm going to give you the quick and short answer and let Jude give you the long one. But no, you're not paying tax twice on that money. But this is one for Jude to explain how that works when it's passed through court.
Right. And so, Sherry, the way to understand it is that the taxable event occurs when the S corporation collects money and doesn't spend it on a business expense by the end of the year. And then it transfers, pass through, passes that income to you and your husband. Y'all pay taxes at the individual level. So all those years that you allowed that cash to accumulate, taxes have already been paid on that. And so the taxable event is not actually drawing out the money out of the S corporation. The taxable event is that the S corporation earns and collects money and doesn't spend it on business expenses.
Does that make sense, Sherry?
Yes, sir, absolutely. Well, that's what I wasn't sure at, because that was kind of what I thought it was.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Because it's like, all right, thank you. Bye.
Let's do Rudy in Uptown. You're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Rudy?
Hey, guys. Two questions, and I can take my answer off the air because I'm driving. I don't want to get pulled over or anything. So first question is, my wife's LLC got a EIDL loan last time from during the stimulus, EIDL, and I heard at least that they are considering letting people transfer that to a PPP loan. If y'all had heard anything about that, because that would be forgivable. So, and the second question is it a good idea to load up? I think I have a job right now, but I think I'm about to lose it. So I was wondering if I should load up my 401k real quick. Before that happens, my picture came out on the internet. I was up at the Trump riot in D.C., and I think my boss is going to fire me. So I was wondering, can I load up my 401k before that happens? And I'll listen off the air. Thanks.
Okay. Sorry to hear that you may be having that problem. Gosh, that's bad. Anytime you lose your job and is not good. Feel for you there. Jude, can you help him there?
So the first point was on the wife's EIDL. There was some talk about forgiving the EIDLs, but that's the first I've heard of transferring over to a PPP that was forgiven. So remains to be seen what comes in further legislation. That has not been done yet. And those conversations of the tax administration of the EIDLs, the Economic Injury Disaster Loans, have, you know, sort of come down a little bit with the inauguration coming up. And so let's just wait and see what happens. Now, to his question about loading up the 401k, it's the beginning of the year, first month of the year. If he loses his job, my understanding, 401k has to be done, you know, by paycheck. I don't think it's arbitrary. Is that mean you can't just, I want to contribute the full annual limit on one paycheck. Is that your understanding, Gregory?
Yeah. So really what it comes down to, he could push all of his income into his 401k up front. I know some professionals do that. They're, you know, I've heard that before. I know a physician that he kind of like his whole quarter, he gets all of his funding done to his retirement at the beginning of the year. I personally spread it out, but in our caller's situation, if he's wanting to just get his remaining pay, if he thinks that's going to happen and push all of his paychecks in there to get money into that deferred account, be fine. I have concerns about him. Does he have emergency money? Is he going to need that money while he's in between jobs if that should happen to him? So that's kind of my thoughts. I'm not going to say he should. He's just got to look at his situation and what benefits him longer range.
All right, let's do Sam and McComb. You're on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory, James, and Jude Heath. How can we help you, Sam?
I've got two questions. The first one on the stimulus money. They're looking back at your 2018 or 2019 tax return. Is that correct?
Right, whichever one you filed last.
Okay. Well, my income is a big change from then. Is there any way to get around that to apply for the stimulus money?
Jude?
You can't change your previous filings to be able to get the stimulus if your income doesn't allow you to get the stimulus. If you heard the beginning of the show, the IRS is grappling right now with their software and the e-filing software. And one of the things they brought up was to accept the stimulus. The stimulus is a prepayment of tax. So this new stimulus would you think that your income would come back down into the stimulus range in 2021? Or put another way, you've got a year forward to look at that. And so just because you don't get a stimulus check, you might get a stimulus payment on your 2021 filing. Does that make sense?
I don't really understand it, but my income in 2021, my earned income will be, you know, a lot different than it was, you know, in previous years.
2021, or you said 2019.
Yeah, 2021 will be a lot different than previous years. A lot
smaller or higher?
A lot smaller.
So you might qualify for it even if you don't get the stimulus payment in the beginning of the year. That's my point is that if 18 and 19 were both higher years and you don't get the stimulus payment, the stimulus is actually a tax payment that you reconcile with when you file 2021.
Okay. All right. My second question was contributing to a Roth IRA. It has to be earned income. Just say make $14,000. Is that the max that I can contribute to a Roth between my household, my wife and I?
Yeah, so your question is, do you have to have enough earned income to be able to contribute to a Roth? And your answer is correct, that you need to have earned income to do any IRA. And so your limit for that year, you have to have as much earned income in order to contribute up to the max. And the 2021 limit, I'll look that up for you real quick.
It's $6,000 for under age 50, $1,000 catch-up if you're 50 or older. So the most you can put in on a Roth contribution per worker is if you're 50 and over, $7,000, Sam.
Okay. So, Bart, but then that's my wife is included in that also?
Yes. If you have enough earned income, you can contribute both to both yours, and your earned income will cover that. She could be non-working. You could make $50,000, and you could put $7,000 in each of your Roth IRAs.
Okay. All right. And, that answered my question.
And once again, on the stimulus money, did you, just for clarity there to know, and look, there's going to be more stimulus in 2021. They're already talking. There's already been some. There's going to be more contributed out. And your future tax returns, when you file 2020, you know, that might help you, and it might be solved through that, as well as going on to the next tax year, where you may not get that stimulus now, but through the tax returns, that will be corrected if you did have right to receive that payment. So thank you for listening to Winning at Life, Sam, and calling.
Thank you, Sam. All right. We have the first month of 2021. We're halfway through it. So that means we're getting into tax season. And I feel like there's some people out there listening that are tired of doing taxes themselves. They've been thinking about getting someone to get some help with. And whether it's with Jude or whoever else, talk them over the line, either Gregory or Jude, talk them over the line and stop them from doing it themselves. When I did, I was very glad I did it, but I was hesitant to turn it all over to someone else.
Well, I'll just say this for Jude. This is their thing. They do a great job in it. They coordinate with my firm, and Jude and I both are about creating tax efficiency, maximizing tax brackets, tax savings, and looking forward. Because I don't think it's just should always be, well, this is what I did last year. Well, let's get that fixed and let's go forward. What would you like to add, Jude? I made a good case for you, I hope.
Yeah, no, thank you. And absolutely. And to that point, there was a new tax law voted in on December the 27th. And there are some really good provisions that people can take advantage of right now. One specifically is that the 50% meal exclusion was removed. So for the next 2 years, 2021 and 2022, 100% of your meals and your clients are now deductible.
It's back.
Well, let's go to lunch, Jude.
All right. If you need to contact Jude, call Gregory's office. Go to GregoryRicks.com or 504-832-9200. Thank you very much for your time, Jude. Have a good one. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. So we have a new year, a new tax season. Some news of that already is they've pushed back the start to tax season. You can't file until February 12th. Usually they start it sometime toward the end of January. But they've had a little bit of issues getting the new rules, the new laws, all the programs, all the set-asides, getting it programmed into their software.
So, I think that's a mixed bag. Some people are going to be excited about that. Like, good, I didn't want to do it. Can we put it off longer?
Well, I'll be excited if they push that April 15th date a little bit later.
And then the other side is like, darn, I needed that refund
right
in a couple weeks.
Well, I know people who clock that refund as fast as they can and they have it.
Yeah, so that's the ones that's like probably needing money and now it's going to be delayed a couple weeks. So from that standpoint.
Okay, so there's still a few things up in the air. There's going to be another stimulus package coming down the turnpike there. It's going to be pretty generous, but we already have sort of some ideas of what are going to be in it because we just went through all this in 2020. So now I'm starting to think, okay, they pushed off required minimum distributions. First off, they said that it had to be at 70.5, and then they said at the end of 2019, now you know what, we're going to make it age 72 now. And then they said, no, you know what, we changed our mind. You're just not going to do it at all this year. We'll start the new age 72 thing next year. Gregory, what's the likelihood in one of these stimulus bills that they're going to just kick it out to the curb for 2021 as well? You think we might not have a required minimum distribution this year? And this is for IRAs, 401ks, things like that.
We can't predict what they're going to do, but we're not anticipating that. That has not been put out there in any way that, yeah, we're going to do that again and kick RMDs to the curb for 2021. We're expecting those distributions to be required in 2021.
My spidey sense has me at about 30, maybe 40% the likelihood that they're going to kick required minimum distributions for 2021.
Well, from a planning standpoint, I can't plan that until it's actually happened there. But for most people, they're needing the income anyhow for most people there. And then there's other reasons to take required minimum distributions or take distributions from your IRA. And one of them is because they need the money. The other is maybe it's going to help you long-term tax-wise to take that distribution, you know, maximize your margin. RMDs, if they keep putting it off, you're building up more money there. Could that shove you into a higher tax bracket, or RMDs later are going to be taxed at a higher rate? And it's not just, oh, I don't have to take them, so I'm not taking them. There's times where we, even though people doesn't need or want the distributions from IRAs, there's reasons we have them start taking so. And so number one, because they need the money, so that's not the case. The other reason is to create tax efficiency, to maximize that tax margin, not having it build up. And then the third reason to start maybe taking distributions from that IRA, or as well taking the required minimum distributions out, is because what you're leaving behind has to be distributed within 10 years to adult non-spouse beneficiaries. They have to take all the distributions within a 10-year period. They only have one RMD on a non-spouse inherited IRA. It's year 10, 100% of the account balance is required to be distributed. So that's my case on that. And even if they waive it, it's still discussions, it's still planning, and it's not just like, oh, nobody's taking it ever this year. You know, I don't think it's a big change.
Sean in Covington, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Sean?
Yes, I was going to refer to those RMDs you were talking about before. I have an inherited IRA, which I think may be different than this regular IRA, but I've been getting those minimum distributions, and my question is, she said something about 10 years, so does that mean that, like, in 10 years all that has to come out, or is that a different situation?
What year did you inherit that IRA?
That was about 3 years ago.
Okay. Well, the Secure Act changed that last year. That was actually 2019, I believe, that Secure Act was passed on that. And really what that changed is it took away the stretch. So if there was a death in 2020 going forward, there is no stretch. So being it was 2019 or before the death occurred, that's grandfathered under the old rules. So that inherited IRA, you have to take required minimum distributions, but you can take it over your entire lifetime.
That was the impression I had. And when you said the 10, I was confused for a second. But if you're saying it's a grandfather situation, I completely get that.
Yes. And thanks for the catch, because that's something I failed to mention, is that's on deaths that have occurred 2020 and into the future there.
Okay.
So there's a distinction, and we kind of always have to talk about that distinction.
So my original thought on the situation is still in place then?
Yes, it's a stretch for you, and all you have to do is take the required minimum distributions each year.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Appreciate
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Thanks for calling reminding me to do that and clarify. And his point is an inherited IRA is actually computed a little bit differently as well regarding the rules for RMD on an inherited account versus a spouse's distributions from that, or your own RMDs on that. The rule for, for individuals, the new rule is 72. When you reach age 72, you have to start taking required minimum distributions out there. And if you're already taking RMDs, you have to continue doing so. They don't, you're grandfathered, so you get to keep doing that. But if you didn't fall into that window, you will have to start as well taking those.
Thank you very much, Sean.
I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. How about investing for a few years at a time? Since 1926, 84% of the rolling three-year periods of the S&P 500, the 93 separate three years beginning 1926 through 1928, then through 1927 through 29, etc., have produced a positive return. That's 84% of the three-year periods. Something to think about.
Mary and Gonzalez, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Mary?
Yeah, I had a question about spousal support, spousal benefits, I guess is what I should say, and Social Security.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to try to see if I can make this so you can understand it. Back in August of 2018, I was born in 1954. I was 63, I think, in a few months. So I went to Social Security to find out, you know, how all of it worked. When should I take my Social Security? And when should I take the spousal? And I was told that I could go ahead and start taking my Social Security then. And then when my husband filed at his full retirement age of 66, and I reached my full retirement at 66, I could then begin apply for his and get 50% of whatever his was, his full benefit was. This year I called back in December because I turned 66 in December and talked to someone on the phone because you can't go in the office. I talked to a lady on the phone. She told me that I could apply then and still get the benefit. And I was like, okay. So I said, well, that's what I want to do, but I don't want to do it till I'm able to get the full 50% of his support, of his benefit. And we went through all of that, and I get a letter back, and it tells me the amount I'm going to get, and it's not what I was expecting. So I don't understand. Did I do something wrong?
So let's backtrack. And okay. And you were born in 1954, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And did you indeed turn on your benefit at 63, I thought you said?
Yeah, 63 in a few months.
Okay, so you turned on your work record at age 63. So you turned it on before full retirement age. So
correct.
So you're looking to switch to the spousal benefit, which is 50% of the worker's benefit. If you had waited to turn it on at your full retirement age, you would have got the full 50% spousal benefit. You would have got 100% of the 50%. But being you basically deemed to have started drawing on your work record at age 63, you got a reduction. You didn't get that full benefit because you turned it on early, prior to full retirement age. That haircut, that reduction carries forward to that spousal benefit.
Okay. Now, we specifically asked the lady at Social Security, I've asked several people, and they tell me, oh, yeah, you can do that, you can do that, and you can still get the full 50% of when you turn the spousal on. And now they're telling me that I can't, so I don't understand.
Yeah, it's probably...
Just because they didn't know what they were talking about.
Well... It's probably a confusion on the wording. Is you can draw the 50% benefit you based on 50% of the worker's benefit. You can indeed do that when they turn it on. When they turn it on, you can draw on that record because you have right to 50% of the worker's record. But the other part of that answer is it's subject to when you have started. If you've prior started your own benefit, that reduction will carry forward. So I don't think the full conversation was connected because it's two parts. And if you had waited to your FRA to do it and he indeed had turned his on, you're getting, in essence, the choices. Your work record at FRA would be 100% of your work record or 100% of the worker's 50% that you're allowed by law. And you would get whichever is larger of the two. being you turned it on at 63, you're carrying a reduction forever forward on that. And that is the correct answer. I just don't know. You know, I won't say they're wrong. It just may have been a misunderstanding in the discussion, because you kind of have to talk about both parts.
Right. Well, I mean, I specifically said, okay, so if I do this now and don't wait till I'm full retirement age, when he reaches full retirement age, I can swap over and get the, not swap over because they tell you you're not doing that, but I can apply for his the spousal benefits and get 50% of what his is. And now they're telling me, no, you know, that's not the way it is. And yeah. It's like every time I talk to somebody, I get a different answer. So,
well, I gave you the correct answer. I'll okay. stand behind that. Okay. My answer is correct, and that is how it works there. So okay. you could well, have well been told wrong. I'm not going to throw right. them under the bus, but it could have been wrong, and it's not the first time we've heard that, but you did call the right place.
Okay. Us. Now, the other thing they told me, the last thing they told me was that I can file an appeal, and because of that, since really when I filed, and he was already 66, I was deemed to be able to get his spousal benefit anyway. So they can go back and change it.
Wow, that's interesting. So they just started your work record. And so you're telling me that his 50% is larger than yours, your yes. work record. And, yes. but you understand if he had done that, it still would have been reduced back then.
Yeah, I understand. That's what they're telling me, but I could go back and, all those months that I didn't collect it, that they told me that they're required to pay me that. So it's like, I don't know. So I wrote a letter. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and let us know how that goes. And I agree with you on if they said you're eligible to file an appeal, I would have filed the appeal. I would recommend yeah. you in doing so to see if you can get that money back
right.
because of their mistake. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, one thing you did tell me is if I go back, it will reduce the rate that I'm getting forward. It's only like $11 a month, so it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Okay. Sorry, it's a small amount. But, you know, right. once again, it's reduced because you did turn on Social Security benefits prior okay. to your FRA, and it has to,
right.
so kind of two parts. It impacts when he has to turn it on at his standpoint. Now, let's say he had turned it on his prior to FRA as an example. So let's complicate it a little bit. So let's say he okay. turned it on early prior to his FRA. Your benefit still, that 50% that you're eligible for, would have been based on his FRA benefit, and you would have got 50% of that, not 50% of what he was drawing because he turned it on early. And you would have been okay. eligible for that, even though you would have had a haircut as well. So right. just giving a little scenario in there, the discount carries forward in both scenarios.
Right. I just don't understand why they got to make this stuff so complicated.
Oh,
it's government, right?
Who does
well, there's a lot of moving parts to the rules. Have they been tweaked right. since, you know, they did it, set this up? We're closing in on 100 years ago. So,
yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, at least you answered my question. I think I got the right answer now. So at least I understand what happened because nobody can explain it to me.
Okay. And yeah, update us when you hear back on the pill. Be interested in that. Thank you for listening to Winning at Life and trusting us.
Are people really surprised when a government program happens to be clumsy and inefficient? Because I'm not. I'm past that a long time ago.
Yeah. And, you know, those people that do that job, you know, you understand those are Social Security are state offices that are funded by the federal government, but those are actually state employees. And I don't know the training processes and all. And I'll just tell you, there are some that are better than others. And, you know, if you go in there for advice, you know, what I always like to define, a reason you ought to talk to myself and my team for going in, we can help you with the questions, because I think that's what you're looking for, is having the right question. Me, myself, I'm kind of one of those that, yeah, I'll ask the question, but I already know the answer. I'll just be verifying that we're on the same page with it. So, and that's what we help people with on Winning at Life, the radio show, but my daytime job, Gregory Ricks and Associates Financial Advisors, we want to help people with these issues and the timing of when the turning on and what the expectations are. We're a financial firm, and I've been in this industry, showing my age, but close to 40 years. So it isn't some second or third career or something I decided to start doing a few years ago. I for the most part, spent my adult life in financial services and business. And we help people in both ways, and we really enjoy it. And we're in, as far as where offices are, I've got an office in the Gulfport area on the Gulf Coast. I've got an office in Mandeville, Louisiana. So that, for those that don't know that logistically, that's across the lake from New Orleans. And then we have a Metairie office, which is over in Jefferson Parish next to New Orleans, suburb of New Orleans is where that office is. But and as far as people wanting help, just like our callers that we have throughout the morning and on our weeknight show, you can call the office and ask these questions and get help. And if you email and have a question, we will get somebody on that and give you an answer. And if you're needing some help, it can just be as easy as starting with a conversation. And I kind of determine it as a 15-minute phone call, but we don't have to keep you on a call for 15 minutes. And so, you know, if it's a short conversation, start with this conversation. It might be a 15. It's just kind of having a catchphrase. Hey, you can just set up a 15-minute phone call to start with us. And sometimes that conversation could go longer, and it can darn sure go much less if that's what you need. And from that conversation, we're looking to help you. And if you're looking for more beyond that, that call can be extended if you're okay with it. If not, we'll schedule another one to do that. Or we could schedule a video meeting. And, you know, you might hear the phrases Zoom, but these are secure meetings where you have to, we give you a password to join my team member, my advisor on the call. And so it's a safe way to go about it. And you can sit, you know, comfortably in front of your computer, and we'll be in front of ours having a conversation with you and can show you things, go over things, an extended conversation, as well as if you want to come into any of our offices that are convenient for you, and we're looking to add some more on down the road. But to do that, to get that help in whatever situation you need, or an email question, the website's gregoryricks.com, email info@gregoryricks.com. If you want to start the conversation by requesting some information, I'll give you a download as another way to start it, is because I think big emphasis is on creating tax efficiency, making sure you save money on taxes in the future. Taxes are going up. You remember early in Trump's presidential term, there was a tax cut, Jobs Act and tax cut bill, and taxes were reduced through all the brackets. Standard deductions were dramatically increased, and that was a 10-year reduction. So we now know we're less than 6 years left on that reduction. So right there, that tells you it's going up based upon that. I don't think we have the backing for that to be made permanent, if you're a little bit aware of what's going on. So if anything, that might end earlier. So go to gregoryricks.com/too much. If you're looking for some help, that's one way to start the conversation. Download the Winning at Life app and simply call the office. I'm going to give the number to you twice here, but if you want to reach out to the office, all our information is at gregoryricks.com. But there's one number to call, whether you're wanting to set up a phone call, a video meeting, or go to any of the offices. There's one number you need to call. It doesn't matter if you're on the Gulf Coast, Jackson, Mississippi, Birmingham, Alabama, Houston, Texas, or New Orleans. One number, 504-832-9200. And I'll give it to you one more time, 504-832-9200.
right, Gregory, you remember the story from about a year ago where me and the kiddos stopped off at a gas station. My kids asked me what the scratch-off lottery tickets were. So I'm like, well, here's a quick financial lesson. Let's go buy a couple of them. I'll show you how this works. So we bought a couple of them. We got in the truck. We scratched them off. And did we win anything on the first one? No. Oh, they were so disappointed. Well, we have another one here. There's six ways to win on this when we scratch them off. You know what we won? Nothing. So my eight-year-old daughter goes, so lottery tickets are a ripoff? I was like, yes, lesson learned. Let's go home. So then they asked about the lotto tickets. I'm like, well, that has an even further chance of you winning than the scratch-offs we bought. And so they're like, well, then why do people buy it? If you have 141 in 147 million chance of winning, why you buy it? Because for a day or two or for a few hours or at least, you are holding in your hand this fantasy.
A chance.
That someone's just going to show up and drop a big pile of money in your lap and everything's going to be okay. And it is with that, the fantasy that powers every lottery in America, that we go to our call of the week.
Miss Sims in New Orleans, you're on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Mrs. Sims?
I have a question about pension plans, or pension money. Let me give you just a little background. My husband worked for this company for a few years, and when he passed away I lost him in Katrina, but when he passed away, he was not working for the company at that time. He had moved on. In November, I got a phone call from a company, and they said that I was due a pension. And not only were they going to start the pension, but they were going to pay me all the back pay from 2005 when he passed with interest. And so I received that money, and I have three questions about it. I got a lump sum plus a monthly payment that I'm going to receive. And I assume that money is taxable at the regular rate?
Yes, it will be taxed as ordinary income.
Ordinary income.
Yes.
Okay. My second, is there any requirement or distribution that I have to do with that money?
No.
Is it treated that way?
It was paid directly to you, correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, so there's no RMD on that. You've already received the money.
Yes. Okay. And thirdly, can I put that money into a Roth IRA? Can I turn it over into a Roth IRA?
You cannot, because that was a distribution from a plan. It's already been distributed to you. And for you to put it into an IRA or the Roth version of an IRA, you would have to still be working or generating earned income to qualify for that contribution.
Oh, okay. Because I thought since it was a retirement pension that it could go to in the Roth, but you're saying it can't.
It cannot, because it's not earned income to you. And
to me,
what you're
okay.
referring, you can't roll that over into that account because it's a distribution from a pension.
Okay. Well, that answers all my questions. It was a windfall, I must say this. I'm happy with it, but I just had to get these things answered, you know.
Because
it was
ma'am.
15 years of it plus interest, so it was nice.
Well,
I totally
really
unexpected. I was not aware that I had this coming to me. And the way it was found is some other company took over the finances of this previous company, and they were going through the records, and that's how it was found.
That's an amazing story. Story of the week. Gregory, you got a question from online?
Yeah, real quick here. Somebody asked, how are cryptos taxed? And cryptos are taxed just like their stocks, bonds, real estate. You incur tax reporting liability on the capital gains or losses from your crypto transactions.
And you can leave a question anytime on the Winning It Life app. Just do the text function on the front screen. In the meantime, your home away from the show's winningitlife.com and the Winning It Life app. If you need a financial advisor, that's gregoryricks.com, or you can call his office directly, 504-832-9200. Have a good weekend. Go Saints. We are Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Roth conversion is a taxable event and may have several tax-related consequences. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decisions regarding your IRA. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks and Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks and Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.